The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Welcome to our show this morning. I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
We want to welcome you to our show, Healing the Grieving Heart, and we also want to remind you that you can visit us through thegriefblog.com as well as our Open to Hope site. We have a lot of information on hope and healing on those sites, and we hope that you will go there and that you'll find inspiration. And Heidi and I always like to say, if you don't have hope right now, lean on ours till you find it. Well, Heidi, we've had quite a morning, haven't we? We've been talking about our new website for an hour with our team.
Yes, and I'm so excited about the website because it's going to be so user-friendly and so easy for everybody out there in our listening audience to go on and navigate the system. One thing I love, Mom, is the fact that you'll be able to go on the website and you'll be able to click on, like, death of a spouse and get all the radio shows that are about death of a spouse or death of a child. They'll be very specific.
Yeah, and you'll be able to get articles. It's just going to be an amazing site. We're putting a lot of effort into it, and it's going to be exciting, and I think you'll enjoy it. And we'll only have one site. Right now we have two sites, the Grief Blog and the Open to Hope site, and they'll all be morphed into one site, so it's going to be very exciting. Well, Heidi, we hope that people will visit us on our Twitter and on Facebook. I was having trouble with that. What have you been putting on there lately?
I've been putting up our latest YouTube. There's a great one on really creative rituals you can do after a loss as you're healing. I mean, it's fabulous. There's stuff like some of the rituals include painting your toenails blue with your girlfriends. There's a lot of creative stuff that she brings up. So I've been posting some YouTubes, and, of course, I posted today's show, and I'm keeping you updated on everything that's going on in the foundation.
Yeah, so make sure you sign up for Facebook and get your friends to sign up for it. And remember, all these shows are archived. I mean, we just tell people we have over probably 300 shows archived for you on the Grief Blog right now. And you'll be able to go in and listen, and you can download those on iTunes. And it's just such a great thing to be able to listen to them, you know, if you're up in the middle of the night or whatever. And it's also great if you have I just had somebody call yesterday from Arizona who had a friend's stepson died in 14 years old in California, and she called me, and I said, you know what? She said, I don't know what to do, what to do, I don't know what. I said, why don't you listen to some shows, and so that you can hear some of the issues and some of the problems, because it's so great to have friends, isn't it, Heidi?
Absolutely. In fact, it reminds me of a girlfriend of mine who just contacted me and said, Heidi, my best friend just lost her sibling. I want her to come see you for therapy. And I said, wait a second. She may not need to see me for therapy. What she needs right now is just support and acknowledgement and a really good, you know, team of friends around her while she's going through this. And, you know, I'm here if she needs that, but that may not be what she needs at this point.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to talk about those kinds of issues with our guests today, John and Russell, and they're from the Grief Recovery Institute, and they have a wonderful book, The Grief Recovery Handbook, we'll be talking about. And, you know, this idea, they've got an idea in their book about, they'll talk about it, but having, I call it a friend, finding somebody that you can do grief work with, Hyde, and this might be what you're telling her, might be what you're saying. You know, maybe it's time that you were just talking to another person about it or whatever until you move on. Well, Heidi, why don't you introduce our guest today, because I'm very excited, and I know we're going to have a great show.
I absolutely will. Before I do that, Mom, I just want to say again, and we said it before on the show in the last couple weeks, our hearts go out to everyone in Haiti and all the people that have had loss, because now people are really realizing who, you know, actually did not make it in Haiti, and there's been so many losses. I mean, there's a university called Lynn University in Florida where my girlfriend's son goes, and all the students that were, I think it was five or six students were down in Haiti volunteering, and they now can't find them and just assume that they've probably died. So for all those out there that have lost people in Haiti, we're
or are not
really
sure that they've even lost them yet. You know, for sure, you still hold that hope. So
right, absolutely. Our thoughts and our prayers are with you right now.
Absolutely.
Okay, Mom, I'm honored to introduce these guys. I love the work they're doing. Their names are John W. James and Russell Friedman, and we're going to talk to them today about moving beyond death. John W. James and Russell Friedman have been working with grievers for more than 30 years. They have served as consultants to thousands of bereavement professionals and provide grief recovery seminars and certification programs throughout the United States and Canada. They are the founders of the Grief Recovery Institute and the authors of the Grief Recovery Handbook, the Action Program for Moving Beyond Death, Divorce, and Other Losses. Welcome to the show, John and Russell.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I'm thinking there are four of us on, so when you guys talk, if I don't say your name, can you say, if you come in with some comment, just say, this is Russell or this is John. Usually
okay.
Works out pretty well.
No problem.
Well, John, I thought we might start out with you because I noticed in your bio that you have not only lost a brother, but also lost a baby.
Mm. Well, that's true. You know, I'm often asked, you know, how did I get involved in grief recovery? And no one wakes up one morning, you know, and makes an intellectual decision, oh, I think I'll get involved with grief.
Right.
I had a son die in 1977. Mm. And I think within about 2 days, it finally dawned on me that although there should be an enormous number of people who are trained to help grieving people, there weren't any, which, you know, kind of led to an investigation to kind of really save my own life. And then I was very fortunate to find a process that worked for me. And then, much to my surprise, over the years, I have found that it, you know, works for everyone. In multiple languages all over the earth.
Wow.
So I'm very happy about that.
We're going to be interested in hearing about that. And then, Russell, you haven't had the death of a child, per se, or a sibling, but you've had divorce, financial things, and those are certainly the losses, right?
Yes, and of course, since I got here, both of my parents have died, and other people who are important to me, relatives and friends. So, but I arrived here some 22 years ago on the heels of my second divorce and a bankruptcy for $500,000. The combination of which literally brought me to my knees. I mean, I was beyond devastated, and you know, I know the word hope is real important to what you do and to what we do, and I think we'll talk about it, but I was as close to hopeless as I have ever been, and perhaps was hopeless because, kind of like John, only differently, I didn't know where to turn to get help, and I didn't know what to do. So I had all these normal and natural reactions to the painful loss of a second loss of a spouse, death, you know, of a divorce, and a bankruptcy, which made me feel like the failure of the universe. And people would say allegedly helpful things like, don't feel bad. Did you know that Walt Disney went bankrupt 7 times before he made it? And, you know, I didn't know it. I didn't care. It didn't help me. Anytime someone told me not to feel bad, I went, why not? My heart's broken. I mean, I didn't even have that language yet. I knew that. I knew that something was wrong with people telling me not to feel bad when I did. It's like, aren't you listening? Doesn't this make sense to you? So,
yeah, and it really minimizes our losses when what we need initially is acknowledgement and validation that what you're going through is really hard.
Not only that, but it's normal and natural. The combination of difficult, painful, isolating, whatever, and normal and natural, just that language alone. I mean, I've talked to 100,000 grieving people, and they come away with hope because, A, I listen to them, I acknowledge, oh, my gosh, how painful, how devastating, how diabolical for you. And then with that alone, and then I say, gosh, how normal and natural to have your universe upside down after a loss like that. And they go, really? I go, yeah. And that alone brings them into a conversation where recovery becomes a possibility. Until then, they don't even think recovery is possible.
Yeah.
So here I am. I'm this lady who I got a call yesterday from this friend from Arizona who said, how can I help my friend, her 14-year-old stepson died yesterday, and her husband, you know, she's in shock, but also she's, you know, amazed and surprised that her husband is so totally, you know, in shock. It's hard for people to see that. What do you suggest right off the top of your head, John? Why don't you give us?
Well, just like you were talking about the website that you're redoing, you know, we could spend an hour on just this story. Of the 140 most common things that are going to be said to this family, 122 of them will be intellectual and therefore will not help. Mm-hmm. And the most important issue to address is that the number one problem for grieving people is isolation. Mm. And as people say, intellectual things, and the griever is dealing with an emotional experience, they will tend to isolate and isolate. And if I understand it correctly, your friend, the woman called and said, what can I do for my friend?
Right.
And the first thing I would say is go to the nearest library or go to the bookstore and get the Grief Recovery Handbook and read the first four chapters of it very quickly. We individuals are never going to know how another person feels. And so the first thing that we ought to be doing is saying, instead of, I know how you feel, we should be saying, I cannot imagine how this is feeling. Would you be willing to tell me?
Right.
So that they can talk and then not judge them. Because as Russell points out, grief is normal and natural. But we, sadly, live in a society that tries to teach everyone that what is normal and natural is somehow abnormal and unnatural. It's very sad.
And that gets into some of those myths. Russell, before we go to break, give us a couple of those myths that make us not...
Absolutely. There are six that we highlight, although the truth is there are probably more and variations on them. The first one we mention in our books, our literature, our talks, and even here, or right here, is one that little kids get right away. A little girl goes to preschool, comes home with tears in her eyes. The mommy or daddy says, what happened? Which is a good question. And the little girl tells the truth to the adult she trusts. And she says, with tears in her eyes, the other little girls were mean to me. To which point the parent makes a colossal error and says, quote, don't feel bad. Here, have a cookie. You'll feel better. Now, the question is, does the cookie make the child feel better or does the child feel different? And the answer is different, not better. But look at the opening line. Don't feel bad. Why not? If Gloria called me up and said you're having a great day, would I go, don't feel good? So someone tells us the truth, says they don't feel good, and we tell them they shouldn't feel that way, and they should cover up that feeling with a substance. Then are we surprised when we have 200,000 or more obesity-related deaths in the United States of America every year? We act, one minute, and we get real surprised. 1 minute more, we get real surprised again and again and again at the alcohol and drug abuse, and yet our parents, and this is not an attack on parents, taught us to use substances to modify or medicate our feelings. Don't feel bad, you have a cookie is a bad teaching,
yeah.
Done accidentally by loving parents who haven't thought it through.
Well, the next thing is, and we're going to go to break after I say this, the next thing is when you go to the hospital or wherever somebody dies or something, somebody says, okay, here's your Valium.
Hello.
And that's the next thing. We're supposed to take that.
Well, John, tell a story about that.
We got to go for a break. You'll have to tell the story after break. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. We're talking to John James and Russell Friedman, the authors of the Grief Recovery Handbook. And we hope that you'll listen to more and that you'll visit us through thegriefblog.com as well as our Open to Hope site. Remember, all these shows are archived on those sites. Stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you lost a loved one and are wondering where to turn? Feeling overwhelmed by your grief? Join the thousands of people who have found hope and comfort as a part of the Open to Hope online community. It's free, it's safe, it will lighten your burden. Just type in opentohope.com and join our circle of support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
If you have grief and feel stuck, it's time for you to open to hope by listening twice weekly to the Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley shows. You can hear them on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time and 9 a.m. Pacific Time at voiceamericahealth.com and on CBS Chat About It at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time at chataboutit.com. Can't make the live broadcast? Listen to the archives or download the podcasts to over 200 shows featuring experts in the field of grief, loss, hope, and recovery by going to thegriefblog.com. Their shows are inspirational and supportive, healing the grieving heart. Remember, you need not walk alone.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. This is Dr. Heidi, and I'm here with my mom, Dr. Gloria. Well, she's actually in San Francisco. I'm here in New York. And we are talking today about moving beyond death with John James and Russell Friedman, founders of the Grief Recovery Institute. Welcome back, John, Russell, and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, let's see. When we went to break, Leslie, you were going to say something about Valium. I was saying that they like to give people a Valium or a drink or something.
Well, I was going to actually defer that one to John, who tells a story about what happened in a Houston hospital when he was there with the funeral director once. So John might want
I want to actually quickly comment a little more on that myth about bury your feelings or don't feel bad. Children learn and they record information and then they practice the information and then they get really good at it. And a typical child in North America before the age of 15 has received over 23,000, that's 23,000 reinforcements that the showing of sad feelings is somehow inappropriate.
And especially boys too, don't you think?
Well, it's interesting. There's no difference between the emotional reaction between men and women. What there is a physiological difference in the size and location of tear ducts. And so women have the capacity to cry 5 times more often than men. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have any more emotional turmoil going on. It's just that it is easier to see it.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed on your website that you have an article, which I'm sure people would love to read, called I'm Fine and Other Lies.
Yeah.
I love it.
When people go to our website, which is grief.net, up at the very top in the little navigation bar, there's a thing that says helpful articles. And we keep an enormous number of articles up there all the time about every conceivable loss you can think of. And they're free, and people can read them, they can download them, they can print them. We're trying to change the educational model in the world for, you know, people's knowledge about grief, because grief is normal, and grief is predictable. I mean, we teach people all about how to acquire things, and we teach them nothing whatsoever about what to do when we lose them.
Well, you know, I want to just for this gal who emailed me and said, what can I do for my friend? Can one of you talk a little bit about partnering, why she'd want to get this book? Because I think she'd want to get it so she could read about partnering, because that's kind of what her friend is asking her for.
Yes, and this is Russell. In an ideal world, when people take the actions that are outlined in the Grief Recovery Handbook, they would do it in partnership with another human being. One of the reasons is that we will be propelled, and interestingly enough, to be differently honest going outwards than when we go inwards. If we just look at ourselves through our own eyes, through our own filter of information, we don't always get to the truth. We could be honest without being accurate. I think the best metaphor is if you remember the first time you ever heard your own voice on a tape recorder, it never sounds like you. And even to this day, I don't sound like me, and I've been on the radio thousands of times. I recognize it, but it's not me. By the same token, if you ask me to tell you about me, it's distorted by my perception of me. Yet when we do grief recovery, we're talking about people's relationships with others, and it gets it out of the filter. The other thing is a tremendous need to be heard by a living witness. Witnessing is not necessarily a religious concept, but it has that too. In order to be what you have said to have meaning and value, it is really important for another living human being to hear it. Why that's true, we can't tell you scientifically. We just know it is true. So the partnership aspect of grief recovery is really, really powerful and helpful.
And she called her best friend because she wanted a witness.
Absolutely.
I love it. You know, I think that is so true. You want people to witness it. They don't even have to say anything.
No, and think
you want
this,
to say it.
If anything happens, either good or bad, the first thing you do is pick up the phone or go to their house and say, guess what? Whether it's happy or sad, you want to tell someone. And that's the antidote at many levels to isolation. The problem is that the people being told about grief try to get away from the subject instead of moving toward it and say, wow, please tell me about it. I can't imagine, like John said, I can't imagine what this is like for you, which is the most helpful comment in the universe.
You know, what really aggravates me is when I see people who've lost a child interviewed on television, and the interviewer will say, I can't imagine what I'd do if this happened to me. Right away,
I could never survive this. I could never deal with this.
Well, the number one this is John. The number one complaint that grievers report to us is I didn't feel heard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And those are just typical examples of how, because we treat, you know, grief as an abnormal event, people will tend to internalize or personalize it to themselves. And now we're talking about the wrong issue. We're talking about the wrong person. Or the other thing that people who want to help do is they use the things they're familiar with in an unfamiliar situation. And everyone is very familiar with logic, but we're dealing with an emotional event. So people will say things like, oh, don't feel bad, at least his suffering is over.
Right.
Which is 100% true for the person who died, but it is completely untrue for the griever. Their suffering has just begun. And we continually do these kinds of things. And again, it's not that people are insensitive, it is simply lack of knowledge.
Well, the girl who called me yesterday said, I don't know what to do. She was great because she said to me, what's your experience? and I said, well, my son was killed in an automobile accident 26 years ago. And she said, how old was he? And this is just a friend. I said he was 17. Okay. And she said, what about it? And I said, it's hell. It's hard. It's suffering. If you can hear her. And I gave her a couple of ideas. But I thought it was so great. She's going to be a great partner to this friend. Because she is curious about the experience. But, Heidi, I wanted to bring something up from their book. It's a great book, by the way, The Grief Recovery Handbook. It's got wonderful ideas for you, very concrete things that you can do, how you can move through your grief. But, Heidi, they've got something in here I know is going to be a flash for you, and that is don't compare and minimize. Yeah, Heidi talks about that with the 9/11 families, right, Heidi?
Don't compare others' loss?
Yeah,
right.
With yours. Who had the worst loss?
Absolutely. It happens. It happens a lot. I mean, as a brief sibling, it happens because you know that the worst loss that can ever happen on the face of the earth is the death of a child. So who am I to even think about my brother's death when my parents have been through so much? I mean, that's kind of the stuff out there. And, you know, we all know that the worst loss that can ever happen is the one that's happening to you right now.
Exactly.
The one that's left you on the ground wondering how you're going to survive and find hope again. And the 9/11 families are another. You know, they all had the same kind of loss on the same day, but it was a different relationship.
Exactly.
So they often get into the comparison of whose loss is actually worse.
And let me jump in. This is Russell. We can put a piece of language on here that really, hopefully, people hear. All loss is experienced at 100%. There are no exceptions to that. That is a universal truth. And that 100% represents a unique relationship. Every relationship that has ever happened on planet Earth is unique. There are no exceptions. Now, you can hear John and I talking some fairly strong absolutes, but we've been doing this a long time, and we have seen all the danger spots. The biggest danger to a griever other than isolation is comparison. Now, we've seen people try to compare death and divorce. They don't compare. I've seen people's lives destroyed by divorce and other people's lives destroyed by death. And isn't a divorce a death of a relationship and the death of the hopes, dreams, and expectations? And the issue isn't my relationship to my spouse from whom I'm divorced compared to your relationship to your spouse who died. My relationship to my broken heart that is devastated is the issue, and it's not comparable to anyone, anything, anytime. And the thing John said earlier is the crucial line. If anyone ever says, I know how you feel, they are incorrect because of the uniqueness of all relationships. And so the truth is you never know how someone else feels, even if they've had a parallel experience. The parallel stops at the intellectual truth. We both had a spouse die. We both had a child die. We both had a divorce. And it has no meaning beyond that. There is a connection, but it's a limited one. The real issue is my broken connection or damaged one by the death of my spouse or the divorce from my spouse. So we have to bring it back to the grieving person, not to the generality about loss.
I love that. I love that. My relationship to my broken heart, that makes so much sense.
Perfect. Well, and then add to that, not only do we kind of train people to compare losses in order to minimize feelings, but we even teach them to compare their own losses.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when I was very fortunate as a child in that I had two grandfathers that were living. Now, one of them lived clear on the other side of the country, and I talked to him twice a year on the phone, and he sent me little presents for my birthday and Christmas. When he died, I experienced grief at 100% of what that unique relationship could create.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I had another grandfather who lived three doors down the street, and I saw him every day, and he taught me how to play ball and so forth. Now, when he died, I experienced grief at 100% of what that unique relationship could create, and the one has nothing whatsoever to do with the other. And it's very important for people to understand that. There is no half grief, okay?
But don't you think that it can be a little easier if you're trained in the grieving process? If I got your book, I think my second grief I might be able to ease it with understanding of about what's going on.
Well, if you really got into the book and got a hold of the categories of investigation to identify unfinished business and so forth, you would be so much smarter in your living relationships that you would have far less unresolved grief following every loss.
I like Heidi in their book. I really like this because Heidi and I don't like acceptance or completion or whatever. But your completion isn't what we think of as completion. Your completion isn't cutting it off or anything. It's working through the issues that you had, completing every, you know, each issue that was a problem and being able to retain the sweet things.
In a simple sentence, grief recovery is the series of actions to discover and complete everything that was left emotionally unfinished.
Yes.
At the time of a death, a divorce, or any of the loss, period.
I love that. Unfinished business, Heidi.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah. It's really a great way to look at it because, you know, this idea that we, you know, we should cut off. Heidi and I have done some, written an article on continuing bonds, and we have a great relationship with Scott, who died 26 years ago,
mm-hmm.
because we remember who he was.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's a great thing. Well, I want to talk a little bit,
Mom,
too.
I think we need to go on break.
Oh, we do? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even hear that. Well, when we come back from break, I'm getting so excited about these people. When we come back from break, I want to ask John just quickly about, I have just lost a child, because I know there are people out there. I've just lost a baby. What now? You know, just that very day or whatever. What some ideas by Russell and John might be to help me get through until I can even get myself to the bookstore. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. Please stay tuned for more.
opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This podcast is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, which also offers you a free monthly e-newsletter containing current articles, book and movie reviews, as well as podcast schedules. Just go to opentohope.com, click on newsletter, and receive your monthly newsletter filled with hope and support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, this is Dr. Heidi Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Have you lost meaning and purpose in your life since your loved one died? Does each day feel like an effort? You do not have to go through this difficult time alone. As a bereaved sibling and licensed psychologist with over 15 years' experience, I will work with you in a collaborative, supportive way. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can contact me at 917-338-6396 or email me at drheidihorsley@gmail.com. That's drheidihorsley@gmail.com. To learn more about my private practice, visit my website at www.drheidihorsley.com. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking about moving beyond death, and our guests are John James and Russell Friedman, founders of the Grief Recovery Institute. Welcome back, John, Russell, and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, before, John, I want to ask you the question I ask at break. We've got this lady who the death has just happened, and what do I do before I can even get myself off the floor to go to the store or think about anything? But before we do that, I just wanted to talk a little bit about your workshops that you guys do. You do them all over the United States, right?
Well,
all over the world.
Yeah, we have an office here in the U.S.
And where are you located?
We're in Los Angeles.
Oh, you are? Okay, California.
And, we also have an office in Toronto and an office in Stockholm.
Whoa.
And before long, we'll have an office in London. And then it's, I think, the next one up is Mexico City. And so the Grief Recovery Handbook is translated into a whole bunch of languages. You're actually holding the 20th anniversary edition.
Wow.
So it is a very successful book because the information in it works.
And it's also very practical, and it's got steps. It's got things that you can actually do.
Yes, and that is the key to everything. One of the pieces of misinformation is that grief just takes time. But the truth of the matter is that if you rely only on time, nothing will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want people to understand is that, yes, there is a certain amount of time necessary for recovery, but more important is what action am I taking within time? The example we use in our other book, When Children Grieve, is, you know, if you walked out of the studio today and found the left front tire of your car flat, you would not sit down on the curb and just wait for air to get back in the tire. You would take action within time. And that is the key to grief recovery. And I really want to say this other thing real fast. Where we're dealing with the death of a child, the society seems to be over-focused on things like how old was he or how old was she, that kind of thing. And they're missing the first 9 months of the emotional relationship between the mother and the child.
Mm-hmm.
From the moment a woman knows she's pregnant, an emotional relationship begins. Now, where the dads are concerned, and I hate to tell these stories because the dads have been lying for a long time, the woman says, oh, I'm pregnant, gee, don't you feel great about it? The man says, yes, but it isn't real. When it becomes real is the first time he actually feels the baby move, and then the emotional relationship begins there. And so if we focus on things like, oh, how long did he live, and it's only 4 years, let's say.
Or maybe 4 minutes.
Or maybe 3 days, as in the case of my son. What we're missing is the hopes and the dreams and the expectations, which are completely emotional content, that the parents had about what kind of a parent they were going to be and how they were going to love this child and so on and so forth. And that is all 100% real and needs to be identified and addressed.
And we're always saying this when we do shows on miscarriages, because I've had two miscarriages, and you're grieving, like you're making so many good points, you're grieving not only the loss of the miscarriage or the infant or the baby, but also the loss of the future that you thought you were going to have.
Absolutely, completely, and every bit of that is valid in a society that wants to get off the subject or change the subject as fast as they can because they don't know what to do.
And the big tragedy on the miscarriage, and this is something John and I have helped thousands of people with, is they get told, don't feel bad, at least you didn't have a relationship with the baby. And that
mm-hmm.
is totally false.
Or you can have another one.
That's the replace the loss myth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the one that, well, first of all, let's start at the beginning. For most people, the first loss they experience in life is loss of trust. They have a loss of trust event or an experience with mom or dad or brother or sister, whatever. But then, for the vast majority of people in North America, the first concrete loss is the death of a pet. Almost 14 million pet deaths every year in the United States alone. And we deal with that by saying, oh, don't feel bad. On Saturday, we'll get you another dog. Or cat, or you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad part of this is you cannot say hello to the new until you first learn how to say goodbye to the old.
And yep, that's lovely.
And that's the part that we just don't teach people.
I guess I had a great family because we had a pet cemetery behind our house.
But watch how this extends. The replace the loss with the pet gets extended in a really sad way, which explains at some level our divorce rate. When I was 15 and had my first breakup with my first girlfriend, I was moping around the house for 3 days. My mother, who loved me, said, quote, don't feel bad, there are plenty of fish in the sea, which was the first time I knew I had been dating a fish. I thought it was this nice girl named Marcia. But my mother was teaching me, don't feel bad, go get another girlfriend.
Right.
So I did, and I did, and I did. And each successive relationship lasted less than the one before because I brought everything unfinished from the prior one, including my non-trust of girls in general, with young women. And so by the time I was starting, relationship was ending because I knew it was going to get hurt. And so we are surprised we have to 50% divorce rate when everyone is encouraged to, you know, jump out and get another girlfriend right away. But replace the loss starts where John says, usually with a pet, even with a hamster, a dog, or whatever. And so it's something we have to get corrected as an idea. Relationships are not interchangeable like light bulbs. You can't just turn them on and turn them off. You have to grieve and complete what's unfinished, including the loss of trust, broken heart, hurt, sadness, pain, isolation. You can't just turn that on like a switch.
Okay, so here I am. I somehow got on this radio show, so whoever's listening to this must be moving along a little bit. I mean, you could at least turn on your computer. So my question is for you, John, and for you, Russell, too. Give me something short, one thing that you think that I can know or do or something that will make it so that I can get through to start on this process.
Well, again, depending on the time that we entered the story here, during the first 2 to 3 days, what happens around grievers is they're usually surrounded by so much support that they can't even find a place to sit down in their own house. But on the morning of the fourth day, the rest of the world goes back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And the griever is left with the feelings of, oh my God, don't they understand? And the other thing that's enormously important, we get hundreds and hundreds of phone calls in here every week and, you know, thousands and thousands of hits on the website. And one of the first things that people need to know is that the character trait that is most common to the experience of grieving is a reduced ability to concentrate. And so people will call and they'll say, gee, you know, I was standing in the bedroom and I had this great idea, and then 3 minutes later I'm standing in the kitchen and can't remember why I went there. Am I losing my mind? And the answer is no. You're experiencing emotional shock. You have just had a trauma, emotional trauma, that is every bit as bad as if you were in a car accident. And people really need to be gentle with themselves And they need to understand that whatever it is they're feeling is normal and natural for them, and not to let other people talk them into time frames. And one of the other myths that's enormously important is the myth about be strong for others. I remember when my grandfather died, all the relatives said, oh, John, you have to be strong for your mother. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're telling my mother, oh, you have to be strong for the children. And so we.
And really, you have to be strong for me because I don't want to watch you grieve.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're all, and we were all so strong. And so the pain went on for months longer than it needed to go on.
Let me jump in and give you the antidote that for everybody to hear. We give a new choice. You can be strong or you can be human. Pick one. Strong or human. Because being strong implies or means covering up feelings, not showing them. At a time when it's most crucial to be open and honest and to be heard. Remember John said grievers don't feel heard. Well, if you're strong, you're implying that they should be strong too. You're showing a face that doesn't have feelings. It's perfectly okay in support of grievers to have your own feelings. They may or may not be about the person who died, but you have your own backlog of feelings about people who have been important in your life. So you can be a human listener, even if it evokes some of your own stuff. Don't be inhuman while trying to be strong. That's a big piece of guidance. When people do that, everyone feels more connected. And grieving people tend to feel disconnected. So this better idea works more efficiently for the thing we need most at a crucial time.
And I would suggest that you write down the Grief Recovery Handbook and get it, because it will start you off on a journey that is fascinating, the idea of partnering with someone. And it gives little homework assignments, you know, that you'll do together. I don't want to scare you. It's not.
It's actually very easy. The hardest part about what we do is that it's too easy. As long as you don't complicate it, it works.
Yeah, I like this idea of partnering with another person. I mean, I think you say you can do it alone, but partnering is a great thing to do.
Let me add something for clarity. Partnering doesn't mean finding someone who had the same kind of loss with you. Anyone can work in partnership with someone who's... And the truth is, you want to be a partner with someone who's working on their own loss, not yours. Because if you have a mother-daughter come because the husband/father died, you got to be careful they can't be partners because they had different relationships. Let's say the dad was unfaithful to the wife and the daughter knows it. Now she can't be honest with the mom. So we want to have... We don't need to have the same person or loss involved. We just need honest people partnering to give each other an ear to allow them a voice.
I was thinking you could take this to anybody.
Absolutely.
Take the book and say, would you do this with me?
Absolutely, and that's what we recommend in the book. Any grieving person is a candidate for partnership because they are flailing around in a world that seems to push them away, where they don't feel invited, where they feel they have to act recovered when they're not. So a partnership can be a life-saving thing, not to mention the actions that are life-altering to help the will to live.
The easiest way to find a partner is to just walk around with a copy of the Grief Recovery Handbook with the face pointed out.
And people say, what is that?
Exactly right.
That's great. Well, we're going to go to break in a minute. And when we get back from break, I want to talk a little bit about what you would do at that first partner session, just quickly, so people will get a feeling for what they might do. But we're also going to talk about your seminars and how people can get in touch with you to do this work. I think you do three-day seminars, so sounds pretty amazing. I'm your host, Dr. Glory Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Remember, all these shows are archived on thegriefblog.com, and please sign up for our Facebook and our newsletters. Stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Whether you are a new or frequent listener to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi's podcasts, the Horsleys value your connection. We invite you to join our Facebook and Twitter circles of support. We'll keep you up to date about Open to Hope Foundation events, new podcasts, and YouTube spots. Just go to Facebook or Twitter and search for Open to Hope. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Make your vote count in the second round of the Chase Community Giving Program by voting for the Compassionate Friends, a national self-help bereavement support organization for families that have suffered the devastating death of a child. In round one, the 100 charities with the most votes, including the Compassionate Friends, are each receiving a $25,000 grant and have been entered into the second round voting January 15th through the 22nd. The charity that receives the most votes in round two will be awarded $1 million. Yes, that's right, $1 million. Five runner-up charities will also each receive a $100,000 grant. The Compassionate Friends is asking for your vote. This is your opportunity to help a great cause with only minutes of your time. For more information on the Compassionate Friends and how you can vote for them January 15th through the 22nd, please visit on the web, CompassionateFriends.org. That's CompassionateFriends.org.
Hello, I'm Eric Kipple, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichipple.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking about moving beyond death with John James and Russell Friedman, founders of the Grief Recovery Institute. Welcome back, John, Russell, and Gloria.
Well, Heidi, I want to talk a little bit about what all the information and all the things that Russell and John have got. I mm-hmm. want them to talk about their seminars. But before we do, I wanted you to talk a little bit about their website, because my DSL is down, and I know you went on it, and you're just loving all the articles.
Yes, I love the website, and John and Russell will chime in here, but it's very comprehensive. I mean, they have a lot of articles with great titles. They have a 12-week grief recovery outreach program. They have, you know, the grief recovery personal workshops. There's just a lot of information for you, and it's very accessible. It's in bullet format. You know, you can get a lot of information. How do you access your website, John and Russell?
www.grief.net. So it's real easy, grief.net. Once you get on there, there is a banner at the top, the helpful articles thing. I know we've been focusing on that because we want people to know. Some people go in, a lot of people do, because we get the statistics. They go in and they will spend an hour reading those articles. And the original 12 or 13 articles we wrote years ago kind of have a sequence to them. They kind of follow. They were written 1 month after the other, so they have a thing. Then there's a whole host of articles that were written that have more of a, not fun, but more informative rather than educational. They have a little, and some of them are poignant, like one of my favorites has the title, quote, "You seem like a nice young lady, what's your name?" And if you imagine what that is, that's mother talking to her daughter, the mother with Alzheimer's, because that's what the people hear. Topics that you can't even believe on there that are related to this subject, killer cliches about loss. And one of my favorites is, watch this, and everyone listening, I suspect a lot will be able to relate to this. Am I paranoid, or are people really avoiding me? It's poignant because grieving people realize they're in the mall, and they realize people know their son died or their wife died, and they don't come up to them, or if they get caught talking to them, they change the subject.
Right.
And it's a fascinating article. By the way, I want to do one more myth quickly, and we can get back to wherever you want to go. One of the most profound myths that affects grieving people, it can be done a little fun here. I'm going to ask a question and ask the two of you to say out the last word of a sentence, okay?
Okay.
A laugh and the whole world laughs with you. Cry and you cry.
Alone.
By you were both brainwashed, and so was everyone listening. Now, that is not true. What is true is when you experience something, happy or sad, the first thing you do naturally is tell someone. The idea of grieving alone is a learned lie. It is natural to communicate all your feelings in the moment you have them. A baby does that without having to be taught. We take that away. So the isolation that we talk about for grievers is more learned and observed than natural. And we want to get people back to natural, which is to communicate their feelings in the moment they have them, to help empty out the pot, not bury the feelings, not feel bad when you feel bad, but tell the truth about yourself and have a safe audience. If we all get retrained that way, we become better in the same questions that you've been getting. How do I help my friend? Well, one of the ways is not to run away from the topic.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I want to say that when Russell just did what I said I wanted to do after break, which was we are looking at the first homework assignment that you would have with your partner, and is dealing with some of the myths, and one of the myths, number 3, is that we grieve alone, and just give it time, replace the loss, don't feel bad. So that's some of the things that you would work on with your partner in that very first session. So I just wanted to give people that piece. Yeah. But I want to move on to tell people a little bit, and maybe you want to, I don't know which one you, if you want to do it, about the seminar. How can I get in touch with you? What would it be like? I mean, here I am. I'm very bereaved. I'm very sad. I'm going to go to a 3-day seminar. Is it going to be safe? You know, what's it going to look like?
Go ahead, John.
Well, one of the many things we do is a 3-day grief recovery personal workshop. Mm-hmm. And it is the safest, it is the most emotionally safe experience you're ever going to have. One of the things that we do is, in very small, manageable bites, we give people the information that they need in order to take the next action on the road to recovery. So it's like we give them a little piece of information, then we wrap a little blanket of emotional safety around them while they take the first action within time. And then we give them the next little thing. And it's so loving.
Can I cry?
Pardon?
Can I cry?
Oh,
buy stock in Kleenex. When you can. We use more Kleenex per square inch than any organization on the planet.
and that is normal.
Yes.
Hey, by the way.
And I love the description, Mom, of this workshop. It says in a bullet, it's the ultimate journey back to your heart and to the mainstream of your life.
Okay, now I want to ask you a question, John. How am I going to get my husband there?
Do you pray?
Because he's not really grieving, only I am.
Well, let's see. You could say to your husband, listen, you need to go to that seminar. Or you could say, I am need to go to that seminar. Would you come and support me?
Mm, yeah,
that's a great one. I like that.
That's a one.
Lot of the men that we have on our show want to fix things and want to make it better. They're grieving, but they have a different way of showing it. And I think saying, will you come with me?
Well, that's one of the socialized ideas that men get. And that is if someone shares a feeling with them, they think they have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is they only need to hear it. No one is asking you to take an action to fix someone, because someone who is sharing a feeling is not broken and does not require fixing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another one of those little kind of small examples of the misinformation that we have about grief in the world today.
It's also an extension of the fact that men, perhaps more than women, buy into the idea of being strong for others. So it kind of all dovetails. Unfortunately, it's a negative dovetail. It doesn't help. If it was helpful, we'd be promoting it.
Can I come without my wife?
Yes. You know, in a manner of speaking, it's often better for couples not to be together, because their relationships with people important in their lives, whether it was a child who died, whoever, are unique. And sometimes the line gets smudged, and we want to have – there's also other safeties. You know, most people had a spouse or a boyfriend or girlfriend before they were married, and the freedom to do grief recovery work is sometimes works better not being – with your partner, your life partner in our program. Although if anyone does come to our personal workshop or our certification training with their spouse, we guarantee you they're going to be split up. They'll never be working together. We won't allow it because it isn't safe. And remember, John said the first thing is emotional safety, and it's not safe to do that work together with your partner.
So if I do come with my partner, you'll figure out how I don't have to spill my guts, he doesn't have to do it either.
Absolutely, because it wouldn't be safe.
But let me throw this in here real quick. We are in effect trying to do less of the personal workshops, and the reason is that now after 32 years. We have an enormous number of grief recovery specialists that we have trained in the certification program. And then they go back to their local communities and they put together grief recovery outreach programs, or they work with grieving people one-on-one using the grief recovery process that we invented.
So they can find that on your website, because we're going to have to close up the show now.
Yeah.
But the other thing I want to say is, I've had a child die or I've had a spouse die. Does that mean I can't train in grief recovery if I want to do your training?
No. Oh, no, no, no. We want you.
Okay. That's good to know, because, you know, there's that old myth out there, if you know, you don't want, it's too close.
No.
In fact, we believe that your experience of recovery, not your experience of loss, but your experience of recovery is what you will be teaching, or completion is what you'll be teaching the people you help. Nobody needs help in experiencing their pain. They need help in the actions of recovery, and that's what you would be guided to do.
That's great. Well, have you got one last parting shot, audience?
No, my parting shot is I want to thank you both for having this topic on the air, because it is such a hidden issue in our society.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being on. And how about you, Russell, if you got
I want to say, as much attention as we paid to the Grief Recovery Handbook, please remember our other book, When Children Grieve, for adults to help children deal with death, divorce, pet loss, moving, and other losses. It's a powerful book. And almost everybody listening will have children who are affected by the loss that may have affected them, either a sibling or a spouse or whatever. So let's not forget the children here, because what they learn early dictates what happens the rest of their life with other losses.
Oh, Russell, I want you on my marketing team, don't you, Heidi? Thank you, guys.
I accept.
Thank you so much for being on. It's been a delightful.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
You're fabulous.
Thanks for giving people an action program for moving beyond loss. You guys are great.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.